Anyways, I'm going to turn it over to my mom and dad, or my dad first.
You don't want to come up?
What do you want me to say?
All right.
I have a plan, even if she doesn't.
Your bright support.
This is my partner that did such a great job with our kids. And I want to give you a little background, first of all, of growing up when I was young. I grew up on a farm, and at about 8 years old, my dad's like, okay, you're old enough to get out there and start helping on the farm. So I had daily chores I had to do every morning, every night. And then when the summer rolled around, which hardly ever came in Western New York, but anyways, for the few months we had, it was like, okay, get out there on that tractor, and I could rake, I could cull a pack, I could do certain things where you just had to steer the tractor, and they showed you where the clutch was and the brake and how to shift and, put the clutch in to shift and put the clutch in to stop and use the brake to really stop. And so I, 8 years old, I was driving a tractor. I mean, when I look at my grandchildren, I'm like, I don't know if I'd put, I'm talking about a big tractor. And my dad also was one of these guys that was really tough guy, and our heritage is kind of a German background, which is you want them to have a good work ethic. I'm not saying other nationalities don't want that, but Germans were so paranoid about that kind of, anyways. So I was always told I never did a good job. Yeah, Heike, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it was like...
Can we tell how I was raised?
Okay, you tell how you were raised now.
Whereas I was raised in a home that wasn't Christian when I was younger. My mom actually went to a Bible study when I was about 13 years old, and she accepted Christ as her Savior, and we started going to this tiny Baptist church, probably smaller than this church. And my parents always did not have a good relationship, so I didn't see a lot of love in the home. But I did get a lot of praise. So we were very opposite. It was probably an upper middle class family that if I tripped, I had ballet lessons. If I had a little art, I had art lessons. I had a lot of praise. My parents owned apartments, and they'd speak Spanish. And my dad would say, or my mom would say, come speak Spanish to the people. Hola, ¿qué tal? ¿Cómo está? Because I was raised in Florida. So I was raised with tons of affirmation. So, and I always also was a good student, so I got affirmation in school, too.
So she got a lot of affirmation. You want to sit down?
Well,
okay. Sit down. Good. Now I can just be here. It's hard to shut preachers up. So when you're ready to come back, you can.
I'll go like this.
So anyways, so about 8 years old, I'm a very tender spirit too. I very emotional person. My dad is a rock. It's like he grew up going out and working from 5 in the morning till 8 o'clock every night. And they'd come in and he would, they would have dinner from 8 to 9. And then from 9 to 11, he said he would do his homework with a lantern and then go to bed to wake up at 5 the next morning. And just that was his life. So, to him, he thought, I got to drive a tractor. He was like, I was driving a team of horses at 5 years old. I'm like, wow. In the snow, uphill both ways to school. Yeah, they did walk to school too. So my dad was a tough guy, and I never saw my dad depressed. I never saw him like, oh, I can't do it. It was just whatever had to be done had to be done. Me, I'm more like, why do we live? Why do we live? My dad's like, you live to work, and so get out there. And so when I would try to do something, I was not mechanically inclined. So when I would try something with a tractor and it wouldn't work out right, I couldn't back it up straight, my dad would just scream at me. Are you just plain stupid? Are you dumb? Don't you have a brain in your head? And on and on, and he would just rant and go on all day long. I can't believe it, Now go out and rake the field. And he'd say, now, I want you to go out and take the first windrow and put it on top of the second windrow, and then turn the tractor around and put the first windrow back, or the second windrow back on top of the first windrow, and then continue on the same way. Do you know what I just said?
Nope.
Okay? Neither did an 8-year-old. And I'm like, you know, what's a windrow? You know, and then he said, well, that's where you cut the swath, and, you know, and you know, so you put your wheel on each side of the windrow, and you rake it into a, you roll it up into a windrow so the baler can bale it. So I went and did it wrong, and my dad comes down again to the field. You idiot, don't you have a brain in your head, blah, 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 blah. Or if you tell me to drag the field the way you plowed it, you know, I'm like, well, how did you plow it? I mean, 8 years old, I'm like, what do you mean drag it the way you plow? Well, follow the dead furrows. What's a dead furrow? Don't you know what a dead furrow is? It's where you turn the field this way, then you turn the field that way, and so you have a little V in the field. And I'm like, they made no sense to me. My dad never explained anything, just thought I should know exactly what he wanted. So all my life I'm getting, you're stupid, you're an idiot, you're dumb, you'll never amount to anything. My dad told me so many times, if you keep living this way, you're not going to amount to anything. I had no encouragement from my dad, none, and never an apology. Now I want to say, since this is being recorded, that I have a great relationship with my dad now, okay? I just want to give a disclaimer. I love my dad. I forgive my dad. In fact, as I look back on it, I see this was God's plan for me to just crush my spirit, so to speak. I was very sensitive. You know, it wasn't like my dad, if you called him stupid, he just like, well, I'll show you. I'll show you I'm not stupid. If you called me stupid, I just wilt. You know, I am stupid. And of course, I wasn't athletic, so the coaches were like, you're stupid. You know, don't you have a brain in your head? You know, I'm like, oh, just like my dad, you know. And so I grew up with a very crushed spirit. And like Proverbs says, you know, by sorrow of the heart, the spirit is broken. And I remember one time trying to, you know, please my dad, who was a freak about being clean. The farm, I mean, our farm hardly smelled. It was just so clean. And I remember one time I'm like, I'm going to please my dad. I'm going to clean the barn. I was about 10 years old. And I mean, I cleaned everything, just trying to please my dad. I'm like, this time I'm going to get the, you did a good job. I remember him coming in the barn, looking at it, and he started walking out of the barn. I'm like, well, Dad, what do you think? And I remember him turning to me and saying, well, why don't you do it this way every day, you lazy bum? You know, you proved to me you can do it. So, you know, Germans never give you much encouragement. They want you to keep, they give you just enough, but my dad hardly gave me anything. So I kind of was like, you know, I can't do anything well. I never did my studies very well. I wasn't real smart either. And so I just always had this crushed spirit. Got saved at the age of 15, which I'm like, you know, for the first time I had like an authority figure who liked me. It's like, God of the God of the universe likes me. That's why I was sold out to him from the beginning. I'm like, wow. I mean, it's not like, you know, a coach or your dad. This is God. And, you know, he just really, through the gospel, said to me, I love you and I want you. I'm like, I cannot believe somebody wants me. So, I mean, I loved God. And so anyways, I felt called to go to Bible college, felt called to be a preacher, went off to Bible college. And I remember thinking, okay, I'm going to be different as a Christian father. Now, my dad was very moral, did not get saved till after I, you know, was in college. And so, he might have thought he was, but I think he really got saved later on. But he was always a hardworking, good father. I mean, I knew he loved me, but he never said it to me. And so one of the things I said, you know, like it says in Psalm 127, it's kind of funny we read this today because this is one of the verses I wanted to share with you. Psalm 127, it talks about arrows in the hands of a mighty man. I should have started with it. Okay. It says, sons are a heritage from the Lord, children a reward from him. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are sons born in one's youth. Blessed is a man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be put to shame when they contend with their enemies in the gate. And what I always did is I always said, God, if you give me a son, I'm going to raise him purposefully. And I'm kind of glad that God put me in a family he did, and I believe this is God's purpose, and realizing, you know, it's so hard to live in a home where you never get any affirmation. It's hard to live in a home where your parents never tell you, you know, you have a chance of being good at something, you know. I mean, I was told my whole life, you're never going to amount to anything, and you're stupid, and you're stupid. And again, now, my dad, I forgive my dad because my dad did not do it purposefully to, like, I'm going to crush him, you know. His idea was, I'm going to push him so he's a good worker, because that's the way my dad responds. I respond totally differently, and there's a whole study that I think you can do, we don't have time for that tonight, about your motivational gifts. But what I want to talk about is, it says, you know, as arrows are in the hand of a mighty man or a warrior, are sons in one's of one's youth. In other words, there were archers back in those days that would just, you know, take the arrow and, like, let it go, and, like, wherever it hits, it hits. But then you had your mighty men who were very skilled. They would aim. They aimed purposefully because they were very good. They're very skillful. And so it's talking about, like, arrows are in the hand of a mighty man are what you need to do with the sons of your youth. And so I'm like, you know what? When I have children, this is the number one thing I'm going to do in my life is make sure they know I love them. My dad never told me, I love you. I remember one time my mom said, tell the kids you love them. He goes, if they don't know I love them, then get out of the house. You know, I give them food and shelter, and if they think I'm going to be telling them I love them, well, then if they don't know it by now, they can just hit the road. I mean, that's my dad, and I love him. He's a tough guy, you know. When I watch John Wayne, I'm like, that's my dad, you know. I mean, he's just a tough guy, and he's not going to tell anybody he loves him. You know, you just got to know. But I'm like, you know, I don't think that's right. I knew my dad loved me, but I'm like, I'm going to purposefully aim to raise my children, you know, to be Christians. And I also, I you know, growing up, and after I was 15 and I got saved and I started going to an evangelical church, some of them are real corny, you know, like they just, all these restrictions on their kids. It was kind of neat that as a young person, my parents weren't like, you can't go to movies. You know, you can't dance. You know, I mean, my parents used to take us to movies for entertainment. They used to take us to dances, you know. So they weren't real strict. And so I had the freedom to choose whether I wanted to do those things. And yet I saw so many of these fundamentalist kids where the parents are like, you can't do this, you can't do that. And they just, and it was all an outward thing, and all an outward conformity that the kids are like, man, I just want to get out of here. And I'm like, I don't want my kids to want to get out of my home. And so I want to be close to them. My mother, on the other hand, my mother was one of these people that she always explained things to me. Like, I remember one time she picked us up from school, and there was we had this chain link fence that went between the school and the neighbor house. And so the kids, when they got out of school, the high school kids at least, they'd go around this chain link fence and light up their cigarettes. You know, like they couldn't touch them because they're on private property, and so. They're, you know, they want everybody to know they smoke. So my mom drives them. Oh, look at those kids. They think they're so big. They think they smoke. It makes them big. You don't have to smoke to be cool. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, my mom was always explaining. She was always teaching and training. You don't have to do that. And I feel sorry for those kids. My mom would say this. I feel sorry for those kids because they think they have to smoke to feel cool. And you don't have, and my mom would go on and on. And these people think they have to go to the parties to be cool. And, I mean, my mom drew us close to, I mean, I felt more loyal to my parents than I did to my friends. And that was most of my mom's real, like, always explaining things to us. My mom would say, you know, your dad loves you. I know he's hard on you, but your dad really does love you. And I know he smacks you around quite a bit. And stuff, but he does it because he loves you. He doesn't want you to grow up to be an idiot. My mom would fill in the blanks for us. And plus, my mom and dad were very affectionate in the home. I mean, they had a very good marriage. And I never, ever felt like mom and dad are going to break up. They just, you know, once in a while, my mom would be like, oh, I think you're a little hard on the kids. But and this is where I want Jenner to come up and talk about when we got married. One of the things is I'm going to purposefully tell these kids that I love them. I mean, Ben, did I tell you I loved you a lot?
Yeah.
I mean, I smooched on them. I hugged them. I kissed them. I wrestled with them. You know, show them that I love them. I told them I'm proud of them if they did something that was worthy of that. And tuck them in bed at night. You know, I'm like, I want my kids to know God. I don't want them to be more loyal to the outward, their friends. I want to keep them close to me. So I purposefully really worked. It wasn't like, man, I want to be successful in my job and, oh, yeah, I got kids here. Huh. You know, what do you want? You know, and so anyways, Jenner, I want you to talk a little bit about the united front that we always talked about having as we raised them.
As you raise your kids, a lot of times the child would do something, and sometimes Ken, because he was raised in a home that he's like a firework. You know, he'd come out really fast at them. And I was raised in more of a home that was a little bit more laid back. I didn't really see anger a lot. He saw a lot of anger. And so sometimes he would maybe be a little too harsh, but I never, ever, ever in front of the kids would ever say, no, you can't do that to them. I wouldn't do that. We would always go back to the bedroom, you know, or another place, and I would say, you know, I think I would always be in agreement with my husband when we were together. When we were together, it was always an agreement. When we were together by ourselves, I would say, you know, I think that might have been a little too harsh. And, you know, so Ken kind of had to learn how to not be so harsh because of what he was raised with.
See, right? I learned from my dad to be reactionary.
Yeah.
You know, just...
Mom and dad, they were both really reactionaries. I mean, if you spilled the milk, it was like, ah! You know, I mean, like, they just spilled the milk. You know, I mean, so we were a good balance for each other, but because he was raised in explosive, so it's good as parents to really look back at how you were raised and what you're bringing into your family. You need to look at how you were raised, things that you might want to change or change that need to be broken. Ken, because he was raised in a home that had the anger, he is always working on breaking that chain. I was raised in a home where I didn't see love. You know, so when we first got married, I really had to learn. I never had a problem with the children. It was really learning how to love my spouse the way I should, you know. So you'll come into marriages having to learn certain things, having to get rid of certain chains that you were brought into the marriage with. But that's one of the things that we were always, probably because we met at a Christian college. And so our Christian college gave us a real good foundation. I don't know. For myself, my parents made me go to a Christian school. Ken was like on fire for God the minute he got saved, because you can see how God, the Heavenly Father, when I got saved, I was a little quieter. You know, I invited people to Bible study. You know, I was like, okay. But when my parents made me go to Christian college, I wasn't on fire for God yet. I was like, okay, I got to go to Christian college. I'm going to find one that does not sound too Christian. Because I went to Palm Beach High School, which means it was just a very secular place, and my parents wanted me to go to this place called Baptist Bible Seminary, and I'm like, oh my word, there's no way, you know? So I went to a place called Shelton College. It was on the ocean in Cape May, New Jersey, which was perfect. And after a year, my parents said, just go to Baptist Bible Seminary for 1 year. I was like, okay, and in obedience, kids. I went there, and it was because of my obedience to my parents. So sometimes parents are going to try to require things from children that sometimes I was not really for it, but I did it in obedience. I thought I was going to wear my hair in a bun. I had this one wool dress I thought I'd wear every day. I thought it wasn't going to be fun. I thought it was going to be so horrible, and I went there, and God got a hold of my life, and it was really my sophomore year in college that I was like, okay, I want to love God with all my heart. I'll be a missionary. I'll do whatever he wants me to do, but it was because really my obedience to my parents, because kids, as you're here, your parents want the best for you. They're all about trying to figure out you and what is best for you. So I know I kind of went on around.
That's all right. Well, we always provided one of the things that when coming out of Bible college, as we dated, we talked about, you know, how, you know, we talked about some things we were going to do as a family. And so, you know, we were kind of unified in never disagreeing in front of the children. And we had kids right away. We had about a year and 2 months after we were married, we had our first. And now one thing, Jenner, she's really strong as far as raising kids. She just has a lot of...
I was a teacher. I like being a teacher. So
she loved the children.
It kind of came more naturally.
Yeah, there's a lot of natural things. But one of the things we always talked about is having a united front. And mm-hmm. and Jenner was always good about that, not rebuking me in front of them. Like, don't, you know, hey, you're rough on them. Or, hey, that I don't
because
agree with that.
Because I felt it. I did feel it. It wasn't like I didn't want to say something. I just knew... It would not be good for the child, you know, to do that.
So she'd comfort the kids and take me aside. And then and sometimes I'd come out and I'd be like, okay, everybody, sit down on the couch. You know, I want to tell you I'm sorry that I was a little rough on you. Okay? I think one of the things that really helped is vulnerability. Sometimes I think the pressure on Christian parents is like, I can't show any weakness. If I show them weakness, they're not going to respect me. Can I tell you what? It's just the exact opposite. If you sit down and say, you know what, I made a mistake. I think I screamed a little bit too much. Because I was a reactor. I'm a nuclear reactor. And I'm like, you know, what did you do that for? And of course I learned a lot of that from my parents. The Bible says, depart from an angry man lest you learn his ways. Well, I couldn't depart from my dad. So, you know, in our house, if you spilled the milk, you know, I mean, who... I never did it on purpose. Was like, what are you doing? You're crying alone. You know, pay attention. You know, like, you know. And they'd go on and on and on, you know, as they're cleaning up the milk. And, oh, it's going through the crack in the table. It's on the floor. No! And I, you know, they were treating me like I was this evil milk spiller. You know, like, you know. So when I react, Jenner's like, they just spilled the milk. You know, I mean. She wouldn't do it in front of them, but she'd be like, take me aside and say, Ken, you can't holler at them for a mistake. And so we learned. Mm-hmm. And so that was one, the united front, I think, really helped. We also always would tell our kids as they grew up, mommy and daddy are never going to get a divorce. That was one of our things. And we went through some hard things, but one of the things as a Christian, I said, I'm going to be determined not to get out of this. We're going to stick it out. And listen, kids are always afraid, you know. I mean, we were so good about not fighting in front of the kids that if we'd have a little disagreement, like, you know, the kids like, you're going to get a divorce. We're like, no.
And that was back, you know, years ago when not very many divorced. Nowadays, live in, you know, quite a different world with that.
Right? So then along with, you know, the being purposeful, you know, I'm like, okay, not only do I want to tell my kids I love them, because I never heard that from my parents, but I also want to have some time to teach them about God without forcing it upon them. And I don't want it just to be in church. So, and the other thing is I didn't want it to be an everyday thing where you read, you know, three chapters of Ezekiel to the kids and then, you know, read a long devotional. So I would usually pick out a verse maybe every other day, every third day. We'd have a time at the table to talk about God. And, you know, it's just of the Lord. This week I was cleaning up my office, going through some old notebooks, and I found something I wrote about family devotions, theme for 52 weeks. So I was very purposeful in what I wanted to teach them about when I would have these, you know, again, we'd have a theme for the week. It's not like I got to have a new thing every week because kids don't catch on, but... I wrote down here, I only got to 38 before I ran out of ideas, but I had perseverance, you know, teach them not to give up. I think that was probably one of my biggest flaws, not cheating. Number three was let dad and mom influence me. In other words, one of the things we used to say is, if you bring somebody home and mom and dad don't like them, you know, as a girlfriend or boyfriend, you probably shouldn't date them. Because mom and dad can see things and they're like, oh, okay, you know. You brainwash them when they're young. But helping and respecting older people, working hard, handling ridicule from your peers. Number seven is God is everywhere. Number eight, God knows everything. God can do anything. I remember when I was teaching my kids about the omniscience of God, or the omnipresence of God, I remember we sat down and I said, okay, if you went and got in a closet and close the door, and it was all dark, and you put blankets over you, could God see you? And I remember our oldest goes, nope. I was like, oh yeah, he can see you. Do you know what that made me realize? They don't naturally know about the omnipresence of God or the omniscience of God, you know, that God's everywhere, that he sees, that he knows. And it's like, wow, I just taught this little kid. I'm like, oh yeah, he can see you in the dark and under the blankets. And he's like, oh, okay, boom. He just learned about the omnipresence and the omniscience of God. So if you think like, well, I can't teach him these deep things, sometimes it's like they just don't understand.
Can I interject real quick? I got a great story about that. I went to a conference with pastors. John Piper, you know who John Piper is? Most of you have heard of John Piper. They were having this big, huge panel on the inerrancy of the Word of God, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And they said, John, how did you come to the conclusion that the Bible was inerrant? And he said, when I was 7, my mom told me. And he goes, that was it. Yep. That settled it. And he goes to show you that even at a young age, if your parents say, this is what the Bible says, this is the truth of God, then it gives the burden of proof to the world to reverse that. But I thought that goes back to that story of,
exactly.
He said, my mom told me when I was 7. No doubting ever since. So. Anyway.
Well, you can go, and later on, they can weigh those things themselves. And so anyways, I just let you know that I had purpose in where I was going. And one of the things we did when the kids were really young, because you know how boring devotions can be? I know a lot of you are teens now and stuff. But when our kids were little, I used to have a puppet. Remember Ralph, the puppet? And so it was one of the things from the Muppets. Remember Ralph was from the Muppets, wasn't he? And I would teach Bible lessons with Ralph. And of course, he'd bite my nose while we were teaching, bite my ear, and Chris and Ben were like, ah, you know, and Tricia was there too, you know, and they loved it. I mean, we made devotions fun, and then we'd have these lessons that, you know, and so I was always trying to, you know, one of the things, like I said, my mother always brought me to her side, so I wanted to have my kids on my side. I'm like, I want them to know that, you know, when a kid out there says, hey, let's do something bad, they'd be like, I always had the sense, like, I can't do this against my parents. You know, you're crazy. I'm not doing that, you know. And so I was very loyal to my parents. I wanted to create that loyalty. And so we talked to them a lot. And Ben, I don't know if there's anything specifically you remember you'd like to add here, but
I think that I think you succeeded at that. I think you also, the dinner table was a place that I talked about this morning, was a sacred place that we talked about. If there were questions that we had, we would always bring it up to you. You would ask us, and you would teach us. I mean, there were a lot of teachable moments at the dinner table.
And I want to say, the other thing we did with our kids is they could ask us about anything. There wasn't anything they couldn't ask about. We were very open as a family, and so I think that's really good. Sometimes too open, because Ken can spill your guts, Ken. I think it really created safety for them, because when they would come home, I remember one time Richard came home and said, what does this word mean, when he was younger? And we always wanted to be the ones that tell him what words meant, because somebody's going to tell him what the word means, you know? So it's really important to do that. Is it almost 6?
Don't worry about it.
Well, I just wanted a couple more things. We also, I created, no, you're done.
Oh, 5:10, because I was looking up there, and I didn't know if it was an
hour back. I created, of course, I had Chris and Ben and Tricia. Richard came 8 years later. So I had two bad boys named Duke and Butch. Does those sound like bad names, you know? Duke and Butch, and then the little girl was Sassy, okay? Duke and Butch and Sassy were these bad kids that always tried to influence my kids to do bad things, like throw rocks through windows, you know, for fun. And Chris and Ben would always be like, no, we're going home and telling our parents, you know, that's wrong. And so, and I tell these stories, we're driving down the road or at devotions, and I would tell, and I would put my kids in these scenarios of, when you have the choice, you're going to choose the right thing. And they're like, okay, you know. And we'd get in the car, Dad, tell a Duke and Butch story, tell a Duke and Butch story. And so I would tell these stories, and they would always come and get Mom and Dad. Like Duke and Butch would go, you know, they would trespass on property and get caught in bear traps. And so Chris and Ben would run home and get Dad, and we'd have to go rescue him, and I'd shoot the bears as they were coming to get the kids. And, you know, I'd make it fun. But the whole thing was Mom and Dad were the first level of loyalty. And so that's one thing I wanted to tell you that I worked very hard on. And the other thing was, I love you. Another thing was, I never wanted to tell my kids they're saved. Okay, now I wanted my kids to be saved, but when I tuck them in bed at night, and where I would spend all the time smooching them and loving them and hugging them and kissing them and stuff, we would pray, and I would pray when they're little kids, "Dear God, someday I pray that you'd help Ben to get saved. I pray that someday Ben will come to know you." And I would never say to Ben, you know, you're saved. You said it when you were five. Remember, we were so scared you're going to go to hell. So, listen, I'm like, God, you need to save Ben like you saved me. You know, open my eyes to the gospel. I don't want Ben to be this fake Christian. Like, you said a prayer and he's out running, you know, doing all these wicked things. I'm like, I want him to know God personally. So when we pray, we'd be like, "Dear Lord, I pray that someday that they'll come to know you." We do the same thing with our grandchildren. We always pray with them. You know, I pray that someday that, you know, if I'm praying with little Chael, I pray that someday Chael will come to know you. But I never try to get them into the kingdom before they die and go to hell. I think that's the worst thing you can do. And same thing with your teenager. If they're kind of questioning, don't be like, "Oh no, you don't love God, you know. And Richard was probably the one of our kids that was grew up as a teenager that had 1 foot in the world, 1 foot in the church. He was good looking. He was popular. I mean, the parents from the town would come to us like, "Oh, we're so thankful for your son because he can drive all the drunk kids home from the parties because he doesn't drink, you know. He's such a good boy." And I'm like, "Thank you. You know, I'm so happy, you know, he's at these parties." I wasn't happy. But we didn't jump on him. And he was like, "I'm not going to Bible college." I'm like, "I don't want you to go to Bible college. If God does," I said, "just let God lead you." I never was like, "You aren't going to tell me you're going to go to Christian college." I'm like, "You go where God wants you to go." And, you know, he came to Lake Ann one summer and God really, we never told the kids. Now here's another thing. Don't ever use love as a weapon. You know, it's either him or me, or it's either them or, you know, me. I got to a point one time where my daughter was dating a guy I didn't like, or liked the guy I didn't like. And I was so close to being like, "Okay, it's either him or me. If you're going to love this guy, I'm not going to love you anymore. I'm cutting off my spirit from you." And God's like, "You can't do that because I don't do that to you when you rebel." And so I always told my kids, this is one thing I always told my kids at the table, even as they grew up, like, "I want you to know, if you decide not to serve God when you get older, if you decide to be a rebel and leave the church and don't love God," I said, "I just want you to know, you can always come home to Daddy for a hug. Because I will always love you because, you know," or sometimes I tell my kids, "Do you know why I love you?" And they're like, "No." I'm like, "Because you're my son. You know, I will always love you. I want them to know I'll never pull my love, never going to pull the plug on the love, because God never does that." And I try to always give them a sense of security. And all of my kids have grown up to love the Lord. I'm not saying that it's because if you do A, B, and C, you're guaranteed. You're not guaranteed anything. But I think if you take the pressure off them, be very vocal about your love for them and assurance of their love. You want to say something?
When he said, you know, that he was driving, we did not really know that about Richard until after he turned his life over to the Lord. It wasn't like we said, "Oh, we're glad Richard's driving these drunk kids." We did not know that. It was a point in Richard's life. And parents, you know your own children. And I knew that Richard was not loving God. And he did not even want to go to Lake Ann Camp going into his senior year. He just was like, "I've been there. I don't want to go." You know, and Ken was like, "Really, we really want you to go this one last time. I'm the speaker." Ken's like, "I'm the speaker, and just do it for me this one last time." And he was like, "Okay, I'll go."
Yeah, I didn't ask him like that. I was very gentle.
He was gentle about it.
"Would you just do it for me?" I'm like, you know, it'd look bad if the speaker's son doesn't come.
Yeah,
you know,
so. But so Richard did go, but it was at that point going to Lake Ann Camp, it flipped his world around, and he just loved God with all his heart. But what I wanted to say is I started getting together with a couple other mothers whose kids were in the public school that we were like, we need to pray for our children. I mean, we got together once a week and we're crying out to God for our kids. And, you know, you pray for with your spouse, but it's always good to get together with other mothers that are in the same situation because kids, we want you to be protected. You know, we want to put you in a little bubble. We don't want you to get hurt. We don't want the world to suck you in. You know, there's so many fears. Now, as you're sitting here like, well, I'm not doing it. But as a parent, you have all these, as a parent, there's a lot of fearfulness that we can have because we look at our children, we're like, oh no, they're going to be doing that, you know? And I had told them before, you know, when Tricia started dating Luke, and Luke was the one because Luke got right with God and Tricia married Luke, which was good. But when she started dating Luke and he was kind of like a punk, you know, we were like,
she said
Tricia? Tricia? I mean, he knows it. I mean, Luke knows it. Yeah. It's just, he didn't love the Lord. And I think whether he got his life right his junior year in college or got saved, I'm not sure which one, but whatever it was, he turned around. He was then the person that we wanted, you know, it was fine. But before that, it was like, you know, and so.
And even what I did with Tricia then is I said, I'm not going to use love for, as a weapon. When she, I could tell she wanted to, I said, okay. I said, I give you permission to date Luke, but you don't have my blessing. You have my permission, but not my blessing. Because I knew she was doing it behind my back anyways. So I'm like, I don't want to use that as a weapon. I'll just say, you can do it. And God does that sometimes too. He gives permission. He's like, no, you're so rebellious. I'm not going to punish you, but you can't have my blessing through it. And boy, when I said that to Tricia, she was like, whoa, you know, I want my dad's blessing.
Yeah, that
so,
makes sense.
And then later on, God worked it out and Luke mm-hmm. got right with God. And that's a whole nother story. But.
Yeah. But anyways, I truly believe in getting together, even as couples or moms or dads or whatever, and crying out to God for your children. Because, you know, our greatest joy, kids, as you're sitting here, is that you love God with all your heart. I mean, that's our greatest desire for you, because we know if you love God with all your heart, then things are going to, like, for me, me having to go to Bible college that I didn't want to go to, once I dedicated my life to the Lord, I really wanted to find somebody who loved God with all their heart, you see? And so that was Ken. And because of it, if I hadn't, I don't know what, you know, I don't know. But I mean, I just, God used that. And you, because kids, all of you teens that are here, I guarantee you, if your life isn't right, your parents want it to be right, you do want to find somebody who loves the Lord if you are a Christian and you want somebody who loves the Lord with all your heart, you know?
Yeah, so. And one more thing.
Okay.
One more thing is, I remember learning to affirm my kids in the right way because my dad never did that. And I remember one time I came home and Chris was doing his homework, and I said, "Did your mom tell you to do your homework?" And he goes, "No." I said, "You mean you just started doing your homework by yourself?" He goes, "Yeah." And I said, "Wow!" I said, "You're a self-starter," and he goes, "What's that?" You know, and I think he was in junior high, and I said, that's someone who doesn't have to be told. And I said, Chris, you are going to grow up to be a great man. And I think you look for the character in your kids that is good, and you can say, I see this. This is going to make you into a great person. And so, you know, affirming the kids, we try to work hard on that, not pressuring them to be good Christians and so on and so forth. And so that's kind of a couple things that I think are the most important to me, being very vocal about your love and so on and so forth. Any questions?
I'm really crying out to God every day.
Yes.
Crying out to God every day to work in, you know, the relationship that you have with your husband and wife, to work in the relationship you have with your kids, and, you know, and just to be open to everything. Any questions?
Yeah. Any questions?
I got one.
Sure.
Hey, did you have any kids that, didn't do well in school and just weren't really motivated to do well in school?
You know, we didn't, because they all turned out like Jenner.
Oh, really?
Me, I labored over my schoolwork.
You were lazy?
I was lazy.
But you were...
But I could use my smarts to get by.
But we never had to say, Ben, go do your work. You did it.
I say that now.
Yeah.
Well...
Yeah.
Of all of our kids, now our oldest son's brilliant, and we always thought he was the smartest. But I remember one time Ben and Chris had the same teacher in second grade, and the second grade teacher said, we said, wow, you know, Chris is, he goes, she goes, no, Ben's the one that's really the smartest. So he just was lazy.
I was lazy.
So
I never had to get on him like, Ben, have you done your homework? We didn't have to do that.
None of our kids. And believe me, I never did my homework. So
and I always did my homework.
We're all like,
there's hope for all of us. Any other questions for my mom and dad? You know, just how would you deal with, how would you have dealt with a child that wasn't motivated? I think that maybe is a good question. How would you deal with a child who's not motivated to do the work?
One of the things I think I saw from my own life, my dad had a strong spirit. He couldn't imagine someone not, and Jenner's the same way. She's never had a bad day in her life. You know, it's like, why don't you feel like getting up and doing your work? And so, I think for me, God healed my broken spirit through the scriptures. You know, like his promises, I'll be there, and so on and so forth. I think I would just look for, to me, I think my dad could have got a lot more out of me if he just would have affirmed me once in a while. If he would just said, wow, Ken, you cleaned the barn so well. I think you're going to do that every day. Instead of like, why don't you do it every day? If you can do it once, you know. And so you need to know your kids and how they're motivated, you know. And so, you know, it's just a lot about knowing your kids. And,
that's good.
And some of your kids are broken. They're not broken.
Some have a weaker spirit. Have a weaker spirit. So when you try to do too much, you're like, can't do it. So if you know that about your child, you probably have to put it in smaller increments or, you know, whatever. Sometimes tasks look really overwhelming to them. And if that happens, it's probably because they have a weaker spirit and they just have to learn to deal with that. It's not a good or bad thing. It's just the way God has made us. Just like some people are really artistic, some people are really athletic, some people, you know, are really, really smart. And in the spirit, your human spirit's the same way. On a line, you have a strong spirit, you have a weak spirit, and you've got everything in between. And usually the person who probably, you know, says, I can't do it, you know, they probably have a weaker spirit, but that's not a bad thing. It's just they'll have to learn how to deal with it in other ways. You know, because Ken has that, you know, like he would tend to be, you know, and I'd be like, why?
And sometimes I think, like movies like Rudy, if you can use a movie to say, here's someone who, you know, they didn't have a lot of talent, and sometimes your children won't have a lot of talent. And it's good to realize that, you know, but they might have that one moment in life where they'll do something great, and,
You know, one thing that you guys did with your kids, I remember you telling me when I first started dating, but I heard you say something. I'm like, oh, I can't believe they said that. You were always honest with the kids about what they were good at, or if somebody had said something about a physical appearance or something like
yes.
They were like, yeah, so you do have.
Yes.
Like Trisha?
Yeah. Yes.
Want me to tell that?
I don't care.
Come over here so I can.
Yeah.
I remember you.
Well,
because some parents.
Well,
some parents
self-acceptance. Psalm 139 says, you know, you're fearfully and wonderfully made. I remember Trisha coming home in junior high, running up the stairs, you know, and crying. And I followed her into her bedroom. She falls on the bed weeping. I'm like, what's the matter? She goes, the boys told me I have big legs. And I'm like, well, honey, you do have big legs. And yeah. And she stopped crying. She goes, Dad. And I'm like, honey, you have big legs. And I'm like, yes, I said, look at Mom. You know, but then I said, but listen, God gave you big legs for a certain reason. So, hey, let's talk about that. Let's not like, oh, no, you don't have big legs, you know. Like, let's pretend that you don't really have that characteristic. And I think the same thing is true about a weak spirit. If you realize your kids have a weak spirit, say, well, you know what, honey? You don't have the determination that maybe your brother or your sister has. But God has done, you know, take him to one of the verses that Vail read this morning, 1 Corinthians chapter 1. God doesn't choose very many wise or noble or mighty. And when I read that as a 24-year-old young man, just newly married, and I'm like, why do all my jobs seem to break me? I'm like, I can't handle this. And God's like, you have a weak spirit. You're not very mighty. Some people are like, give it me, you know. I'm like, and God's like, that's why I chose you, because I'm going to glorify myself by taking a wimp, and I'm going to make you strong in Christ. So don't be afraid when you see weaknesses in your kids, because sometimes that scares you, like, oh no, they're just like me. And, you know, sometimes we talk about some of our grandchildren that are like, oh, he's like me. And I'm like, well, let's handle them in a very, again, it's like the arrows in the hand of a mighty man. Let's be purposefully in how we deal with him, and don't hide it. But.
And one other thing that you guys, I think you did this in your home, or we, you and I always talked about it, is if your child starts to date someone that is like a serious red flag and you're like, whoa, this person's bad, instead of pushing that person away, always have them at your home.
Yeah.
Always,
I
all
think,
the time.
I like, think that was one of the things I learned through this situation with Luke. And Trisha, because they were only in like 8th and 9th grade, okay, they were young when they started liking each other, and Ben had been dating somebody and they broke up, and so I was like, we don't want dating, we don't want relationships, it doesn't worth it, it's dumb. Well, just doing that was like, what? You know, I mean, it was, and I wish we'd brought Luke into the home. I wish we had, you know, said, Luke, come on over, and we would have just talked to him more and tried to encourage him more as a young man, rather than be like, we hate you, get out of our life.
It's not forbidden anymore. And then the child also starts to see how that, you know, person that they like, how they treat the parents in the home and how the siblings
yes.
treat them. Then you have siblings also saying,
yes.
you shouldn't be dating that person,
yeah.
they're not good.
Yeah.
And then eventually the kid's kind of like, okay, see ya.
Yeah.
It's better than forbidden.
Yeah, that forbidden, if that has just been, that was probably the worst time in my life. You know, it was really, really hard. You know.
Yeah, that's good. Any other
questions?
Any other questions?
Teams, do teams have any questions?
Yeah, students, do you have any questions? Or
can I just tell one more funny thing about you, Ben?
No. Let me turn this off.
That's a
good story. But I think what he did, though, was very important, because even as a youth pastor for many years, when we would talk to our students about, you know, true love waits and all that kind of stuff and sex, and I would always ask my students, you know, did your parents tell you about sex? They're like, nope. And I'm like, man, just you have to be able to. Our dinner table was open to talking about everything. And so even issues of sex that we had questions about, we talked about it at our dinner table. And I had friends that when sometimes they would come over and be like, dude, I just cannot believe you had that conversation with your parents. I was like, why? They're like, because I would never talk to my parents about that. I said, well, why wouldn't you? Because when you're a young person, you have all these questions about sex, let's be honest. And if you don't ask someone who you know you can trust, you're going to ask someone, you're going to find out from someone, and you want to be from a godly perspective. And so that was one of the most important things I think they did, was if we had that mom and dad, someone said this word, what does that mean? Again, they mentioned, you know, they didn't smack us up. Don't you ever say that word in this house, you know. It was very, very open. So that was good. That was very important. Any other questions? Good stuff. All right. Well, guys,